want to start a little differently today than normally. I'd like to give a eulogy. There was a man who was murdered here, senseless. Most murders are. This one was particularly senseless. Old man, 74 years old, walking down the street, coming back from a dinner, Easter dinner, that he had had with his family. And guy who was a little frustrated, I suppose. According to his Facebook page, he had not received a phone call from his mother or sister, and so he declared he was going to continue to kill folks until his mother called. That's the most severe case of Oedipus complex I've ever heard. And so I wrote a eulogy for him. In memory of Robert Goodwin Sr., who has one of the greatest names ever. God wins. I like it. We live in times when the souls of many are calloused by continual exposure to violence, destruction, and death. Yet even in the harshest of times, there are moments that stand out from the rest and leave us speechless, confused, and desperately seeking answers. The senseless murder of Robert Goodwin Sr. is one of those moments. I would never have heard of this man had he not been murdered. His face would have been lost in a sea of others with nothing to distinguish him to any but his family and close friends. I'm not sure why the death of this man has touched me more deeply than the senseless murders of millions of others. I only know that it has. Perhaps it was the words his family used to describe this man of God, who was so loving and caring. Perhaps it was some of the anecdotes that they used to reveal his character and the unique qualities of his soul. However, after some time of reflection, I believe it is something less empirical and more intuitive. I have come to believe this man was a real hoot. In every picture I've seen, he has a certain look, almost as if he's thinking up something to pull on someone, to make them laugh or to make some life event more memorable, to say or do something that will entrust to others with a story that they can retell to pass on the joy. He was one of the people, others remember, he was one of the people who make life just a little more joyful. As humans, we seek to understand the events that take place around us. We continually ask the question, why? We heap words on top of other words to explain the unexplainable, and in the end, we are mired in the same confusion in which we began. There remains only frustration and anger for those who seek to make sense of that which is senseless. My people have a certain perspective on senseless violence. We see it as a consequence of wanton or baseless hatred, hatred without a cause. Yeshua had some thoughts on this subject and likened hatred without a cause to murder. We continually see the truth and reality of his analogy on every news report. Our sages tell us in the tractate Yoma that wanton hatred was the cause of the destruction of the Second Temple and is equal to the sins of idolatry, immorality, and murder, which were the causes of the destruction of the first temple. Wanton hatred will eat at the core of any society infected by it. Driven by utter darkness, this hatred will seek out and destroy the good in our midst without mercy. As points of light, the good are most conspicuous up against the dark backdrop against which they are cast. May the Lord welcome Robert with open arms and the words, "Well done, true and faithful servant. Rest in peace, good sir." I don't know why there's so much senseless, insane violence And for some reason, this old man just really did touch my soul as I gaze around the room, the faces of so many others as well. The name of this message is Passover, the reality of God. Our faith in God is under attack continually. In times of plenty, man becomes a little more complacent, a little more confident in his own power. We tend to see ourselves rather than God as our provider. We emerge from out under the shadow of his wings and we are exposed to the naked desert sun, and our condition rapidly deteriorates, which causes us to seek God more stringently. At that point, we must return to God because we have no other choice. We've gotten ourselves into situations that there's just no way out of. We need a miracle. This ebb and flow, this wandering in and out of the presence of God, is a cycle that has repeated itself throughout the history of Israel and the body of Messiah, quite frankly. Sunday is Yom HaShoah. HaShoah is a whirlwind. It's a dust devil. It's a tornado, a wind without control that's powerful, destroys things, mixes everything up. We remember the evil wind that swept across the world. This wind attempted to extinguish the light of God's presence and the memory of his name by destroying all those who claim his name. He started with the Jews. The Christians were not safe. That was a delusion. The records clearly show that subsequent to the Jews, the Christians were going to the camps as well. Hitler and his minions were not the first Shoah that mankind has seen, nor, unfortunately, will it be the last. The world is enmity with God and all those who follow him, and from the world we will receive little mercy, and from the God of this world we will receive none. In the first century, those who followed Yeshua were called Haderech, the way. That's because they walked B'derech Hashem, in the path or the way of God. And just as with Yeshua, the God of this world mustered his forces in a Shoah against them. Yeshua had died. They saw him. He hung on the cross. And as King James said, he gave up the ghost. His spirit left, and his body was left lifeless. The women had gone to the tomb to wash and swaddle the body in preparation for the burial. They didn't believe he was going to resurrect. He told them. They didn't believe it. Nobody goes to swaddle and wash a body for burial if they believe the body's not going to lay dead for very long. The Lord sends an angel to minister to them. And at his arrival, there's an earthquake. And this earthquake causes the stone that was rolled before the tomb to roll away, and it exposes the empty tomb. My people, at least the leaders of my people, placed guards at that tomb because they were afraid. They had gone to Pilate and asked him to place guards. And the explanation was, his disciples are going to steal the body and claim that it was resurrected. So Pilate says, you have guards. Put guards. So there were guards there, but when the angels arrived and the earthquake was there, those guards were terrified. They became, as the scriptures say, like dead men, and they hid. The angel speaks to the women, the two Marys, in Matthew chapter 28, verse 5 through 9. Do not be afraid. I know you're looking for Yeshua who was crucified. He's not here. He's risen, just like he said. Come see the place where he was lying, because he wasn't going to trust. He didn't want them to trust his word, this angel. Come see for yourself. Go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead, and behold, he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him. Behold, I have told you. They left the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to report to his disciples. Yeshua met them and greeted them, and they came up and took hold of his feet and worshiped him. We are not the first ones to worship the risen Lord. These two were. There's much discussion, some even in the Messianic movement today, which I find completely incredulous. I am incredulous at this pondering on whether or not we should worship the Father through Yeshua, or if we should worship Yeshua. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. I don't worship. If Yeshua is not divine, I got to find me a new God. I don't worship Yeshua in spite of being Jewish. I worship him precisely because I am Jewish. And I can't worship a man. That would be idolatry. If Yeshua is not divine, Yeshua is not the Messiah. It really is just that simple. It's basic programming language. It's an if-then scenario. If he is not divine, he is not, then he is not the Messiah. Yeshua had spoken about his death and resurrection often, but his followers didn't believe. In fact, they weren't all that happy about the plan. One of my favorite portions of scripture contains Peter, and it's remarkably funny on one hand and quite profound on another. Who do men say I am? Peter replies, thou art the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Ooh, flesh and blood didn't reveal that to you. My Father who is in heaven revealed that to you. 5 minutes later, in the same conversation, the very same conversation, Yeshua is telling his disciples, he's got to leave. He's going to die. And Peter, God, if Peter made it, at least I got a shot. That's the way I figure it. Peter takes his arm and puts it around the Lord in a fatherly fashion, pulls him off to the side, and the scriptures say, Peter rebuked the Lord and said to God, God forbid. That's amazing. I love that, because it means I got a shot at this. How many times have I heard God's plan and went, whoa, you don't want to do that? Yeah, I got a chance when I read Peter, when I read about David, King David. Their lack of faith is revealed in their behavior subsequent to Yeshua's death when he was placed in the tomb. The women at the tomb coming to prepare him for burial, the disciples on the road to Emmaus where Yeshua appears to them, they don't recognize him, something also quite strange. Are you the only one in Jerusalem who is not awake, that hasn't heard about this Yeshua? They were going home. They were done. They had no idea what their lives were going to be at this point. The one they followed, the one they were hoping would rule from Jerusalem on a throne over the entire world in peace, was now dead. What do we do? And they're headed back. I certainly don't fault them, for in man's thinking, this is just not possible. But of course, with God, all things are possible. I remember the day I abandoned my reason and just believed. It was a moment of extraordinary bliss and peace. And James says the knowledge from above is first peaceable. My normally analytical posture rested in a reality that I could not comprehend, yet knew to be true. I knew it with every fiber of my essence, my being. Yet I could not get my mind around it at all. It didn't make any sense. That moment of faith allowed me to understand those who walked the path of God before me. In abandoning my desire to understand, I found understanding. I received it. The disciples continued to believe Yeshua was the Messiah even after his death. And each eventually died for that faith. Why? Before his death, they weren't going to die. Peter, you know, the guy used by God and Satan in the same conversation, he denied him three times in one night. And eventually, as our tradition has it, he was crucified upside down. Why? If his resurrection was simply a contrivance by the disciples, they would have abandoned their story under the threat of death. No one dies for a story that they made up, that they know to be a lie. Who dies for that? As I sat and read the accounts of the resurrection this week, I was struck deeply. His continuing appearances to his disciples are more than just a little strange. Sometimes they recognize him, sometimes not. He seems to be able to change his appearance at will. There are times that he speaks plainly, and at other times in mysteries mankind still struggles to unravel. He was and shall continue for all time to be the most enigmatic figure in history. We simply don't get him. We cannot make any sense of him. Why is he so unique? His words weren't the only words that have inspired men to sacrifice. Our own Constitution and Declaration of Independence has inspired men to acts of selflessness that rival any that are witnessed and heard about in the scriptures. The words in those documents, the Constitution and the Declaration, called muster on love. They caused love to bubble up inside of people. Love is power. Love inspires courage as it imparts value to things. If I say I love something, I have placed a value on it. And when the object of that love is deemed to be of greater value than ourselves, we are willing to sacrifice for it. Heroes do not hold their life cheap. Those men that we read about, those heroic deeds, those men placed a great deal of value on their lives. But they loved. And the thing that they loved, they placed more value on that than the value they placed on their lives, and they thought it a good deal to trade something of lesser value for something of greater value. How do the old men speak? If there must be war, let it come in my time. so that my child can live in peace. Why? Because he loves his child more than he loves himself. And he would rather be the one to go to war so that his son could live in peace than to live in peace himself at the expense of his child. Now, that's true in all aspects of life, unless you're a politician. Ponder that for just a moment. If you didn't pick it up, I am being as sarcastic as I possibly can. A man fights. Love is bestowed on objects that are real. They exist, whether they be ideas or physical objects, things that are true, real. We fight for our country, for a man's country is real. He lives there and he wishes to protect that land and his life from the destroyer. Men and women have died to save others whom they have loved because there is a very real object to that love. They stand there before him. However, Yeshua's followers saw him die. They saw it. That was their reality, and that reality left them confused and hopeless. They were dispersed. They were wandering back to their homes. His appearance to them after his resurrection revealed another reality to them, not one of this earth, but of a place of far greater splendor. And this spiritual reality was so real to them that they were willing to give up their lives here to live with him there. The words of Yeshua, the words that he spoke to them, began to percolate in their soul, and with each percolation, those words became stronger and more dense. And their love for him gave them a strength to walk the same path as their Lord. These men and women saw things that others didn't. They drank from Mikor Chaim, the fountainhead of life, and in God's light, they saw light. Behold Stephen. Stefan was not alone at the place of his execution. Yet in God's light, he saw light and was transcended by that light. To him alone were the heavens opened up, rolling back like a scroll. And he looked up, his eyes left those with the stones, and he cast them towards the heavens because he saw Yeshua standing at the right hand of the throne of glory. Those who surrounded him must have thought him mad as he began to describe what his eyes saw. But those around him were irrelevant to Stefan. He could care less. His eyes were fixed on the Lord, on heaven, on a vision that consumed him. And the events of that moment were nothing more than a trifle that he would have to suffer through, well, a trifle that would be over soon enough. And then he could be with the one he loved, Yeshua. There is much concern these days as believers feel the fiery blasts from the nostrils of the dragon. Certainly there is another show coming. It's already here. There is always a show coming, Be'olam Hazeh, in this world. It never ends. You're either in one or you're waiting on one. John chapter 16, verse 33, part of the New Covenant portion. The things I have spoken to you, that in mine, these things I have spoken to you, that in me you might have peace. In this world you will have tribulation. It's a promise. It's a guarantee. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. As always, the command of the Lord is, be aware. Walk circumspectly. What does the word circumspectly mean? It means to be aware of your condition. Be aware, but don't fear. This is not to be feared. Don't fear him who can kill the body. Fear him who can kill the body and the soul in hell. The counting of the Omer, the days between Pesach and Shavuot, Passover and Pentecost, are days of deep contemplation, circumspection, anticipation. When we ponder the events of our times and seek to see the hand of God moving. In the first counting of the Omer, we pondered our exodus from Egypt. We had no idea where we were going. What was going to happen? Our lives had been turned upside down. All we knew was slavery. Now we're, quote, free. But we're free in the middle of a desert, a wilderness. Where are we going to go? So we're following this guy. When Yeshua died, they were also left confused. And on the road to Emmaus, when he finally revealed himself to his disciples, after expressing a little disbelief, foolish men, slow of heart to believe in all that the scriptures have spoken, wasn't it necessary for the Messiah to die and then enter into his glory? You know, Yeshua's a little confused. Didn't you read this? I mean, and I didn't write Isaiah 53. Well, that's what it'll be called here in a little bit. You're giving your heads up. I didn't write these words for nothing. Didn't you read this? Foolish men. Why don't you believe? It was necessary for me to die, that the scriptures might be fulfilled. And then going through the scriptures, starting with Moses and then the prophets, he pointed to those scriptures that spoke of him. Read it. It's a wonderful portion of Luke. And then he tells his disciples, go back to Jerusalem, wait in a room. You'll receive power from on high. A little more information, maybe? What kind of power? When? How long? I got a thing. How long are we supposed to? That's all the words they had. And so they obeyed. They returned. I always ponder. It's a little what I refer to as BS, Bert's speculation. I always wonder how many people entered that room. We know how many came out. How many went in? How many got tired of waiting and left? It's just something I think about from time to time. There's no way to know. But they sat there just like our people in the wilderness. They sat in an upper room waiting for what? I don't know. Some sort of power. Supposed to get power here. Time of remarkable anticipation. They remembered what happened at the first Shavuot. When we were set free, we wandered, and then we came to Mount Sinai, and we heard the shofar of God, the truah, the shout. And we heard God speak. All of Israel heard God speak the 10 words before he wrote them down on the tablets. Perhaps they were assuming something, that maybe at the end of this time, we shall also hear maybe in a new way. The God of creation, speak to us once again. When the disciples didn't believe, they were disheartened. When the Lord opened their eyes to behold the wonder of wonders, he who was dead lives forever. That vision transformed the disheartened into glorious creatures indeed, creatures with new light in their eyes that shone round about them. That same vision will impart the same power to us. It's the vision that without which we perish. It's not a vision of what God has called us to do. That will never sustain you, ever. You need a vision of the man or the power of the source, the Mekor Chaim, the source of life that has called you to that. That imparts power. And this understanding arrives only on the wings of the Holy Wind. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 14. The person without the wind, the Spirit, does not accept the word of the Lord because his word is discerned only by the wind, the Spirit. His voice is carried on that gentle wind. If you remember Elijah at the cave, there was all of these magnificent displays of power, earthquakes and fires and storms. And after each one, the scriptures say, but the Lord was not in the fire, and the Lord was not in the earthquake, and the Lord was not in the strong wind, the storm. And then Elijah says, I heard a gentle wind. And the small, still voice of the Lord was in that wind. And that's when he covered his head with the mantle. And that's when he finally obeyed the word of the Lord. He didn't go to the mouth of the cave at first like he was supposed to, did he? He's another one who gives me hope. A lot of these guys give me some hope. He only went to the mouth of the cave when the gentle wind blew and the small still voice of the Lord was heard in the depths of his soul, in the quiet. If you seek peace in this world, you're going to fail. You're doomed to fail with the first step of the journey. Here you will have tribulation, not peace. If peace is your desire, cast your gaze to a more lofty perch, the residence of the Most High. Yeshua said, peace I give you, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives, not the situational peace, an external peace, but a peace in the depths of your soul so that you can be at peace irrespective of the condition that you find yourself in. Like Paul says, I am content with plenty and with having people throwing stones at my head. You know, all that light tribulation that Paul describes, the beatings and the stonings. I'd hate to hear what Paul thinks is like serious tribulation. That was light affliction. If we cast our gaze upward to the residence of the Most High, there we will find the peace that we so desperately seek. It is perhaps the most precious commodity in this earth right now, peace. Especially as Hamas violence fills the earth. A friend of mine who is an artist and a poet rather brilliant man who lives in Jerusalem sent me a poem, and he condescended to himself. His poetry is really quite beautiful, but this one is a limerick. Unbelievable that a published poet of stature would stoop crawl to the genre of the limerick. Unbelievable. But he couldn't have said this in any other form that would have been as fun. It's called Daily Fare, and he writes under the pen name of Don Quixote, who on his favorite and steady steed, Roncenant, battles things that aren't there, that you can't see with these eyes, but still need to be fought. Vexation and woes and destructions and wars are the fare with each sunrise and coffee. So we cover these blows with good movies and shows and a frosting of chocolate and toffee. With crisis of ISIS and Hamas, just the nicest of horrors of madman to face us. North Korea with missiles and Iran with sharp thistles. Only Jesus is left for to grace us. A fun way of saying, peace I give you, not as the world gives, do I give unto you. Father, in Yeshua's name, we give praise, honor, and glory to you. For visions that you have given us in dark sayings of the night, when our minds come to rest, when our eyes close and the light of this world is dimmed. Too often that's when your light shines brightly. And when our ears are dulled to the sounds of this world, that is when your voice is heard loudly and clearly. It is greater than sugar plums. You've spoken to your people, Lord God. You have shown us. Let us walk in that reality, Lord. Let us be aware but unafraid of the things that we see taking place around us. Let us walk in power and in strength to be transformed, even as Peter, whose eyes could only behold the things around him. And then your holy wind came and filled that place. And what emerged was a man born again in the newness of life, who saw the world different. If we should be called on the same path as Stefan, may we find the same strength that empowered him in Yeshua's precious and holy name. Amen.